Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Praxis audio conference training on the logistics of conducting community assessments for grantees of the Office on Violence Against Women. My name is Maren Hansen-Kramer. I work here with Praxis on our technical assistance project for conducting institutional analysis, community assessment, safety and accountability audits, et cetera, and I'm your host for today's call. We're so glad that you all could join us. I'm joined on the line by our speakers today, Jane Sadusky, Praxis Technical Assistance Partner, and my co-worker here at Praxis, Denise Eng, and she's the Program Manager for our TA project on these issues. Hi, Jane and Denise.
Hello.
I'm going to pass it over to Jane and Denise to introduce themselves and begin the session. Denise, go ahead.
Thanks, Maren. As Maren said, my name is Denise Eng, and I am the Program Manager for the Praxis Technical Assistance on Institutional Analysis, sometimes known as Safety and Accountability Audits. And I also work with Praxis on our Blueprint for Safety project. I've been here about 4 years. Jane, do you want to introduce yourself before I just talk a little bit about what community assessments are?
Sure, and hello, everyone. My name is Jane Sadusky. I live in Madison, Wisconsin, and I have worked with Praxis now for just about 12 years in developing and working with communities using this method of institutional analysis that we've called the Safety and Accountability Audit, Community Safety Assessment more recently, and have had the pleasure of working with many of you around the country in trying to figure this out.
Thanks, Jane. I'm just really pleased to have so many people on the call today and to see such an interest in conducting community assessments. About half of you, I think, were at the institute that we did on community assessments a couple of weeks ago. I know some of you wanted to come but were not able to get in, and about half of you have not attended one of those institutes. And so for the sake of those of you who were not at the last institute, I just want to be clear about what kind of assessment it is that we're talking about. The community assessment that we are talking about here in the context of this work is a form of institutional analysis or systems change work. Some community assessments are done, for example, for a community to try to learn what kinds of services are needed for victims of violence in the community. And there are service agencies, for example, organizations serving battered women or doing general kinds of a response to violence in their communities from an advocacy perspective, who have used this methodology to examine their system to figure out to what extent their program does or does not meet the needs of individual victims. And that can take you down a pathway of making some decisions about what other services are needed. But I just want to be really clear from the outset that this kind of assessment process is not specifically a needs assessment to help determine the need for community services. What it is a method, as I said, of institutional analysis, and both Jane and Maren have made reference to that. Some of you may know what we're here to talk about today as a safety and accountability audit. And that's pretty much how we've referred to this process until recently. What we found, though, is that some people were a little, we found the term audit a little off-putting. And so they were a little reluctant to engage in it or had difficulty getting buy-in in their community. I think people think of kind of the IRS or kind of scary things sometimes when they think audits, and that's not what this process is. And many communities, because of that, also were starting to do these projects but calling them assessments. And so we're kind of using the terms institutional analysis, audit, assessment more or less interchangeably. So you may hear those terms used at various points in this call and on others if you participate in future calls, but we just want you to understand that they're all referring to the same thing. What today's call is going to focus on getting started on your actual audit process. So Jane is going to be talking with you about the ways in which you begin to organize your community to get this project started. So with that, Jane, I'll just turn it over to you and you can begin.
Thanks, Denise, and hello again to everyone. Every time I do one of these calls, I have to look at the National Weather Service map to see what's going on out there, and it looks pretty calm for everyone who is on the call today. So we'll hope that continues over the next couple of weeks. The the website tools that Maren mentioned at the beginning, the logistics guide, I wanted to say a couple words about that, because in the process of developing this method and in working with communities, we started collecting all of these questions about the mechanics of, well, how do I pull together a team? How do we do this? If I'm in the role of a coordinator, what should I be doing? What should the team be doing? How do we schedule things? How do we talk about what we're finding? How do we put together the documents that we want to review? All of the kind of mechanics related to the method itself. So that's part of what that logistics guide will provide to you as you have a chance to look more deeply and more closely at it. As we talk this afternoon, I'll mention a couple of them specifically, and you might then want to take an opportunity to go back and look at those a little closer. The other thing I wanted to mention, too, is that some of you may also be looking at the best practice assessment tools, the self-assessment tools that are also available on the website. And those primarily look at 911 and patrol practice, follow-up investigation, and charging decisions. Those represent kind of the benefit of working with, 50-plus communities over the last decade or so in getting a sense of, here's what we kind of know about this stage of the criminal legal system, and let's pull it all together and put it together in a way that can be useful to folks in perhaps a less intensive way than a full-blown community safety assessment. Now, I would say that the tools, the logistics material, all of that can kind of apply either way, because anytime you're having to coordinate something, work with a team or work group, and look at practices within specific agencies or systems, all of the things that we're talking about this afternoon, I think, will come in handy. But we're going to start out first with talking a bit about how do we know we're ready to do this and planning ahead to avoid some of the common pitfalls in implementation once you get farther down the road in using and applying this method. And it's helpful up front to be really clear and focused and be able to communicate what this is, what this method is, and how it might be different from some other approaches to evaluation or needs assessment, as Denise noted. And it's really a process that's focused on identifying gaps between what people need and what institutions and systems provide. So in this case, if we're looking specifically at the domestic violence context, people's needs related to safety, accountability, opportunities to change, particularly in the case of batterers and those who come through that system as offenders, and what the intervening systems provide. So we're always kind of looking at who isn't this working for? Who aren't our interventions working for? Which means that we pay attention to strengths and where things are working, but we're always primarily looking at where's there a gap? Who isn't this working for? And what do we need to do to close that gap? And so that's an important distinction, because I think sometimes what does happen in communities is there's that sense of, well, you're not paying attention to what we're doing right. And it's important to acknowledge that, but it's also important to be clear up front that this is really trying to figure out how can we make it better and make it work for the broadest range of people. So some of the tools that we have for you to take a look at in planning, one is called Getting Started with the Safety Audit Process, Assessing Your Community Needs. And through that is a series of questions related to the purpose. Why are you interested in using this method? What do you hope to accomplish from it? Who's been involved in the discussion and looking at, is this the tool that we want to use? Is this the method that's going to fit what we want to look at? What are we seeking to change? Are we really wanting to dig into policy and practice? And again, ask that question of who isn't this working for? And this tool also takes us through questions related to purpose, questions related to the larger environment, community conditions, the local politics of things, what's in place, who are the key players, who are the policymakers, who's invested in this, have there been any other kinds of studies or analysis that you should know about that relate to the systems you're looking at? For instance, in the community I live in, about 5 years ago, there was a huge review of the whole criminal legal system process, beginning with law enforcement involvement up through sentencing and probation. And while that was a very general kind of look, a detailed look at that broad sweep of things, it's also really important to know about that if we're going to be looking at the response to domestic violence. So that kind of upfront assessing readiness, you're looking at purpose, looking at environment and local conditions and climate, looking at who's going to participate, where can we find the bodies to do this, are the agencies and systems that are wanting to look at the practice able and willing to provide people to be able to do that? How are they going to get involved? And how are we going to include the voices and perspectives of battered women and survivors in looking at the practices and looking at the response that we have in place? That piece can easily be too much of an afterthought, so bringing that up front at the beginning is really important, and paying attention to what's that going to look like. Will we have an advisory board? Will we have membership within the audit team? How is this being coordinated with community-based organizations? All of that goes into looking at the participation and the makeup of the team or the work group that's going to be charged with doing this. Another upfront element related to planning are the resources to do it, the people, the hours, the coordination. Is this coming from a particular kind of grant? Is it, are you able to dedicate a specific amount of time for coordination? All of that's going to influence the kind of scope, too, and how broad your reach can be, because the broader the scope, the more that takes in pulling everything together in this process that involves talking with people, doing interviews, observing what's practices, observing people at work and systems in action, reading the official accounts and documents and policies that go into that. The broader the reach, the more of that's involved, and that has an impact on resources. And then a final piece, thinking up front, is how might we report this out? How do we see relaying what we've learned out into the community? Will it be a broad-based public report that everyone has access to? Who's the audience for it? Is it the community at large? Is the audience primarily the agencies that have been involved? How detailed might we need to make our summing up to be able to be persuasive and moving change related to what we've discovered. So this kind of upfront thinking about what's the landscape, what's the environment, who's going to be involved, how are they going to be involved, becomes really important in connecting then with the other end of things, which is implementing what has come out of this process. So the recommendations and ideas for change, for closing those gaps, for making it work as best as possible for the widest range of people in our communities as possible. It's all intertwined. The readiness to do it is intricately related to the implementation. So purpose, local environment, participation, resources, all of that goes into the mix. And having the time to pay some attention up front really helps pay off in addressing some of the implementation recommendations at the end. Now, probably at this point, some of you are going, well, but we've just landed on this. We have a grant to do it. The grant said we're going to look at this. It seems like we're several steps ahead of doing the kind of deliberate community assessment. Are we ready? And that's the reality of things. Where it might be useful, however, is to go back, if you're in that situation, kind of take a look at what's laid out there, what some of those questions are with respect to the purpose and the environment and the resources, and see if you can answer them. And if you can't, kind of think about, well, who should we perhaps be talking with at this point to be able to answer some of those questions? So, for instance, this very obvious one of what do you see happening as a result of this community assessment? Is there a specific change you're seeking? Having a sense of how different people see that will be really helpful up front, particularly if you're charged with pulling this all together and getting it going, so that you know what the expectations are and then can be able to address and clearly explain what this is, who's going to do it, what will happen, and how we're going to go about it. And not surprisingly, we have some tools for that to help do that as well. You'll find in the logistics guide a couple of things that are particularly useful in that kind of front end explaining what is this, who's going to do it, what's happening, and how are we going to figure out what we're going to pay attention to, or how have we figured that out. One of those is an overview. It's a basic two-page sheet that you can adapt. All of these are Word documents, so you can adapt them with your own organization or project name. You can adapt the language so that rather than saying, what is a safety and accountability audit, it might say, what is a community safety assessment? And be able to use this as your talking points, as you're meeting with people, talking with prospective team members, explaining what this project is, particularly if you've inherited or found yourself in a position of putting this into, getting this in motion, and perhaps didn't have a lot of involvement in shaping it on the front end. Or I was talking with someone today where there'd been a prime mover in the community who'd gotten a grant and got things going and then shifted and became not such a prime mover. So one of those champions for the process and the project had changed, which introduced kind of a new set of challenges. So going to these basic kind of tools of this overview, thinking of it as a set of talking points, thinking of it as something that you can leave with people as you're explaining what this is involved. Perhaps you have a first-time team meeting or work group. Everybody's coming together. They're sitting around the table going, well, I'm not quite sure what I'm here for and what is this all about. So this overview can help plan that agenda, can help guide the discussion, help address some of the questions that people have, and at least set the stage for being able to get everyone on the same page. Also in the logistics guide, then, you'll see an example from Bellingham and Whatcom County of applying that basic question and answer tool to a more specific purpose, where in this case it was a community that had some experience with using the method in other areas in the criminal legal system, and then wanted to use it in examining practices within the court system. So if you put these two tools side by side, one being the safety and accountability audit overview, and then the domestic violence safety and accountability audit questions and answers, you'll see one approach to using that basic who, what, when, where, and how kind of information applied to a more specific local context. So these are a couple of things that we have there to help that front-end planning and getting started. There's also the toolkit that many of you have seen, which lays out the whole method and has some DVDs and other material that might be useful in that process. But this basic overview of what it is, why we're doing it, who we're conducting it, how it's going to happen, that's what's really helpful to get in our heads and be able to articulate clearly. Some of the challenges that communities have found themselves in, and in talking with, we did a survey last year of about 8 different communities, talking with them about, well, what got hard, what worked well and what got hard when it came to implementing what you learned from your safety and accountability audits. And some of the things that came out of that link back to the importance of this kind of front-end piece. The scope was too broad. We tried to cover way too much ground in too short a time. We didn't have enough local buy-in. We needed, in hindsight, with that clear vision of hindsight, we should have done a little more in explaining what we were doing and getting buy-in and investment from some different players and key players. Didn't have enough time and preparation to kind of coordinate it all and bring it together in a way that could have, it didn't work as smoothly, a way that could have worked better. Seeing the method, seeing it solely as a product versus a way of developing a new set of interagency skills. And that, communicating that up front can be really, really helpful when it comes to the implementation point. So that understanding that, again, this is a way to look at our everyday practice, what we do day in and day out in these different systems where we get involved in the lives of battered women and their children and their partners, and this response that we're trying to build, or this response that we have in place kind of accidentally sometimes, by virtue of what happens when somebody picks up the phone and calls 911. So this method is something, it's not a product. It's not a one-time static kind of thing It's not meant to be that. It's really as much a way of thinking about things and building a set of skills for asking questions about the work that we do. Now, we apply it to specific points. We want to look at 911, or we want to look at orders for protection, or we want to look at prosecution, or we want to look at the response to sexual assault in our community. We want to look at supervised visitation services. Whatever that point of inquiry and investigation, there is that specific focus, but at the same time, bottom line, fundamentally, we're really trying to build this framework for understanding and analyzing and changing how systems organize and coordinate their interventions. So from the front end, saying, here's a set of tools, this is a process, a way that we're going to ask questions about our work, and keep asking questions in this process of reflection, action, reflection, action, that's important. And it's often, I think, where things have gotten kind of frustrating when it's come to the implementation end has been this expectation that we were here only for a specific product. That's done. Now we have a list. Let's go on to the next thing. So building in that awareness of this as this method of analysis is also going to be helpful when it gets to the point of implementation. And I think at this point, Maren, we should open it up for questions.
Yes, great. So if people have questions or comments, go ahead and press the number 1 on your keypad to check in, and Stephanie will get you in the queue. In the meantime, Stephanie, go ahead and interrupt if you get somebody who buzzes in. I was just pausing for a minute to see if anybody did. In the meantime, Denise, do you have anything that you want to add up to this point? Denise must be on mute, too. Star 6 to unmute Denise.
Thank you, Maren. Jane, I just was wondering what you might say to people or what kinds of things people can say in situations where, for example, there are key people who are hesitant about engaging in this process, for example, key agency heads. What are some of the ways that you would suggest that people might talk to people who you really need to have on board with this process and but who haven't yet signed on to it?
Well, I think one thing that we've seen in many communities is that to the fullest extent you can to go where the door is open and where there's some basic curiosity about how things might be working or not working for folks, that's the ideal. Sometimes we end up, though, having to, as you said, kind of more persuasion and more opening of that door. It seems like a couple of things have been helpful to communities in doing that. One is to look at that kind of basic DVD with the overview. That's one thing to take a look at, and perhaps up front invite some key players or go to them and say, well, here's what we have in mind. We want to do this process of looking at how things are going. Here's one example where you can hear from some different communities who have tried this out. Another is to really get familiar with that overview sheet. What is it? Who conducts it? What's going to happen? What are we going to look at? Who's going to be doing it, how long does it take, what are the outcomes, getting real familiar with that, and then trying to make that link to how is this going to benefit the agency or the system that we want to bring into this, the kind of what's in it for me. And connecting it to this way of building in a way of looking at practice. I think oftentimes these days it seems there's a lot of interest in knowing how things are going, whether it's from something like the United Way or the county board. And depending on the circumstances, that might be one of the hooks, if you will, for using this method. This will help us figure out how we're doing and what we could be doing differently. So I think that's a piece of it, being real clear on what the process is, thinking about how to frame that for the particular agency. Going back to some of those questions that are on the getting started with the process, and gauging, I mean, sometimes it is not the right agency to be involved, which does get very challenging, and I think also, wouldn't you say, is what we often end up in TA calls, trying to strategize with folks on how to approach that. Getting very concrete about what we want to look at and how and why. And this kind of jumps ahead to some of the method. And for those who have looked at the toolkit or were at the institute, drawing back on some of that, laying out the mapping, if you will, of case process, and being able then to talk with perhaps the prosecutor is reluctant to come on. The commitment has been made under the grant that this is what we're going to look at, from 911 through charging, and perhaps there's a change. You have a new prosecutor, and now you have to say, okay, well, we have this community assessment process in place, and here's why it's important to keep doing it. So to be able to come back and say, well, we know that cases come in here through 911, then they come to your desk. There's a lot that happens in between that kind of works, doesn't work for people. So let's take a look at that, ways in which the intervention that can happen through a prosecutor's office can happen in a more complete, effective way. So I don't think there's any one answer to that. It depends a lot on local circumstances and conditions and getting a read on who needs to be at the table and how to talk with them. I think a lot of checking in with people and talking, and this kind of is a bridge in a way to our next section, which is that key role of someone who is charged with coordinating this. And one of those duties is, to put it kind of basically, schmoozing, knowing who's in the community, talking with them, knowing this, being able to answer those who, what, when, why, how questions, being able to bring together key players and lay out what's going to happen. So, Denise, any thoughts on your end about, I know you've had a lot of contact with different communities too.
Well, I think that your comment, Jane, about going where the door is open is a really relevant comment, and to emphasize the importance of the notion that you may think that there's a particular agency or point of intervention that you want to really look at, but as you begin this process of really bringing people together and examining who you might get to participate in your agency, what the local conditions are, that you might end up determining that that you really need to take a little bit of a different approach, or go to a different agency talk to someone else or find someone else in the community who is who can, as you said, kind of champion the idea of the audit for you.
And that flexibility you mentioned is really important, because it might mean pulling back and adjusting the scope somewhat.
Yes.
If there's one thing, particularly with the criminal legal system safety audits that we've had a lot of experience with over the last decade, if there's one thing I think that's really been difficult for some communities, it's that they tried to look at so much at once and in a really short period of time. And having the flexibility to say, well, we've realized now that we've kind of taken this lay of the land that we can't do all of this at once, but we're going to do a smaller slice and apply this method of looking at our work really carefully so that we can learn how to do it and put it to work elsewhere as well. So, any other questions, Maren, out there? Should we move on?
I think if Stephanie had anybody indicate they had a question or a comment, we would have heard from her. So I think we should continue.
Okay, we will go on here. And that bridge then to the role of a coordinator, someone who has the specific job to pull this together, to understand what's this method, what's this thing called a community safety assessment or a safety and accountability audit, and here's how it's going to fall in place, which, you know, at this point probably also has some folks going, oh my, this is more than I bargained for. But again, we do have some tools to help frame an understanding of roles and the kind of tasks involved and the sort of activities that go into this. Again, with a note that we're speaking here of applying this specific method in its kind of full-blown, all of its elements. So thinking of a process where there are focus groups and there are individual interviews with workers and practitioners, there's observing what's happening and observing the systems at work, there's reading and analyzing case records and files and reports and documents, all of that. But anytime you have that role of coordinating, bringing together a group, a team, to look at practice, some of this is going to apply just as well in that context. So continuing with the logistics guide, if for those of you who might be kind of dipping into some of these through the website as we're talking this afternoon, one of the things that you'll find there, and I should mention that everything that we're referring to today actually comes in the first section of the logistics guide as it's posted online. That's what we're really paying attention to in today's conversation. So another one of the tools there is the lays out the roles of audit coordinator, audit team, and then audit consultant, which is not something that's at all required to do this. It's an additional support that some communities build into the process, and others don't. But particularly in kind of zeroing in on this role of the audit coordinator as an organizer and facilitator, and that in relation to the team then, so the organizer, the facilitator, you're out there schmoozing. You have that task of selling policymakers on the process, explaining what the process is, you know, reaching back and pulling out your handy overview and being able to leave that behind when you go and meet with the chief judge or the clerk of courts or the chief of police or the captain or the whoever you're needing to talk with in explaining this. That organizing and facilitating participation, resources, figuring out how battered women and advocates are going to help inform that process and be involved and engaged in guiding it, recruiting and training the team, working with the team to shape the scope and the question and gather all the information, do the investigation piece, and the analysis of it. So there's quite a huge role involved in that, admittedly. But without that focused kind of organization and facilitation, it's hard to move the questions along. It's hard to really dig in and see, ask the questions of what we're doing. Again, who is it working for? Who isn't it working for? How wide or how narrow, or we would hope non-existent, is the gap between what different people need and what our systems and institutions provide? So we're always coming back to those questions. So the coordinator has that distinct and significant role of organizing and facilitating alongside and with the team. And that team functions as the kind of groundwork investigators think tank. I'm kind of fond of that phrase myself because this notion of bringing people together who are applying their own expertise and experience as practitioners and workers in a system in a method that guides how you look at things and ask questions and then think about it. Think about how is this working, for whom, in what ways, what are our ideas about how to shape that differently, built around this framework of looking at what does the policy require us to do? What do practices, how do we do that? So policy, administrative practice, what kind of resources are in place, the kind of training and education that's involved, the kind of links we have from one agency and system to another, from one practitioner or worker to another, from this agency to survivors, to perpetrators, to whatever we're looking at there, applying that framework and working together as this think tank to figure out what are we seeing, where are the gaps, and what ideas do we have for closing those gaps. So that coordinator is playing that significant role of organizing and facilitating alongside and together with the team members or the work group as the investigators, as the think tank, who actively get involved in gathering information and analyzing it and presenting findings. And this is another point that links back to all of these link to the implementation piece at the end. So the extent to which that coordinator team hangs together and comes together and can present the work as coming from the safety assessment team becomes really important, because then it's not seen as, oh, this is Jane's project or Jane's safety audit, but this is our work together and we're going to present it together. A couple of times in different communities that I've worked with, one of the things they've done when it came to the point of summing up their work and presenting it to the community is they would hold, they held a forum and invited key players in different systems that were intervening, advocacy organizations and community-based organizations, and then together said, this is what we learned. And here's the impact I see it having for my work. So that there's that connection made between this collective effort and carrying it into the next steps for realizing the kind of change that's been identified and recommended. A couple of the things that are in the logistics guide, again, that help get a handle on, well, what is my role if I'm an audit coordinator? What are the different roles that coordinators and team members have? What exactly goes into all of this, looking at the front end, include that comparison that I mentioned that lays out the coordinator, the team, the consultant role. There's also a sample job description for an audit coordinator that lays out different functions and tasks. And then there's a more detailed checklist that really kind of the roadmap. If you find yourself in that role of managing and facilitating this process, that activity checklist that's in there provides a guide, a plan. Say, okay, here's what I need to be doing. If I kind of get working on this stuff, this is what's going to help move this along. And here's where this might be an area I have questions about, so I'll call for some TA help. There's a couple of things there that kind of lay out step by step the kinds of responsibilities and activities that you can expect to be doing in that role. And with that, Maren, I think we'll take another check-in to see what kind of questions folks might have.
Sure. So as a reminder, press the number 1 on your keypad to indicate that you have a question or a comment. And Stephanie will get you lined up to ask questions. And please don't be afraid to ask. I mean, most of us spent a good chunk of time together. So, you know, we're cozy. We're familiar. Don't be afraid to ask any sort of questions at all. Any questions that you hoped you had asked at the Institute that you didn't. Anything goes here with this group, so feel free. And you can also email me at marin@praxisinternational.org. One question that did come in to me through email was about additional resources that would support a coordinator. And one of them that Praxis did develop, not specifically for conducting community assessments or a safety and accountability audit, but is just a really good solid foundation for developing coordination skills for interagency work is called our e-learning course, or in short we call it our CCR e-learning course. I'll send out a link to that resource after the call today. But it's a self-directed, self-study course that's available online for people, and it teaches a lot of similar methods that we use in the audit that you can apply to your interagency work if you don't think your community is really ready to conduct a sort of full assessment. But it does really support and bolster the skills of a person who's in that position of coordinating interagency work.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that, Maren. That's an excellent suggestion. I think particularly if you find yourself in this role and you haven't had an opportunity to do much facilitation, I think it can really provide a big boost of skill and confidence. And even if you have had a lot of that experience, it puts it in a context where you make decisions about what would you do, how would you handle this situation, and then looking at where that might have been a good strategy and maybe might have been a strategy that you'd want to reconsider. So it does provide that kind of very concrete look at some of the strategies. that can be helpful in this work.
Stephanie, any questions come in?
At this time, there are no guests in the question queue.
Okay. I just got another question in. It must say, I'm not super familiar with the logistics guide myself, but it must say somewhere in there about a two-day training for the audit team. And the question is that required? But I think it sort of leads to this question of how do you prepare your team to conduct this type of work? Can you address that, Jane?
Right. And in our next call, we'll get into a bit more detail that's specific to working with the team and those pieces of things. But briefly, the team needs to come together and kind of get everybody reasonably on the same page. We all want to be on the same page, at least ideally want to be within a paragraph of each other or a line of each other if you're thinking about getting on the same page of music. And there is an outline in the logistics guide, I'm pretty sure it's in section 2 without looking specifically, that lays out a two-day training. Some communities have tackled that in one day. The important thing, though, is to have in place a framework where everyone comes together. They start to gel as a team. There are ways to kind of bring people through that introduce them to the, this is what we're doing, this is how we're going to do it, and then let's start by practicing some of this and working with our own material. So one thing that personally I've experienced with a number of communities is using that process of mapping out the case processing as a way for the team to get really engaged, to begin to identify different questions and areas that we want to investigate, to build that kind of cohesion that I think is really important in this kind of process. So we have different suggestions and have worked with different communities to kind of identify, well, what would you put in place and how can you go about putting this kind of training and preparation for your team in place. There again, I think linking back to that suggestion of using the e-learning course can also be really helpful because that addresses those skills at facilitation, then bringing it together with this method of inquiry, this method of asking questions about our work and getting everyone together on that same page so that there's that common understanding of this is what we're doing and why and how we're going to do it. So the part of what's available is that outline of how to approach that with the team. One advantage of doing it in 2 days is that you can make a lot of headway in actually gathering the data and information that's going into the whole process. So, for example, I'm thinking of one community that was looking at, part of what they were looking at related to what happened in setting conditions of release, pretrial release and bail, and they were also wanting to kind of carry that farther and look at what happened at sentencing, what kind of conditions. So it's kind of sanctions and consequences and conditions of probation. So ahead of time, did some strategizing, did a two-day training that took everyone through the foundation and then did the case processing map, did some practice interviews where kind of both learning how to do some of the interviewing as well as gathering information, and then went out and did observations of in the courts. So in the course of the two-day training, had an opportunity to see what was happening at pretrial release and also to see what was happening at a couple of sentencing hearings. So very concretely, they could bring that back and start to make the connection between, oh, if we go out and look at this and ask these kinds of questions and pay attention and bring it all back together, oh, we're getting a much different understanding now of how our case processing map looks and some questions we have about what's happening here and where does the information that goes into setting bail, is there anything there related to what happened with the severity and nature of the incident and the actions and the risk involved. So they were starting to make these connections between seeing the practice in action, having a way of asking questions about it, and then bringing that all together in a very concrete way while they were learning about what they were going to be doing. So there's, to kind of wrap this piece up, the team, the work group, has to have some common preparation. And that's part of the kind of going back to setting the foundation and getting that clear commitment and understanding that what this means is that this officer, this clerk, this probation agent, part of their participation will be attend this training, commit to X amount of work together. And we will talk more in the next call about some of those specific duties and descriptions, job descriptions of team members as well.
Jane, this is Marn again. I might just jump in here a moment to say that while it's definitely not required to do this sort of training, part of our assist practices assistance, our, you know, the funding that we receive from OVW is to help you with this piece and other pieces too. And we do have some limited on-site technical assistance that we can provide where some of our consultants or staff could come out to your community and do this training with your community and the teams that you might pull together. We can do it in other ways too, but I just wanted to put in a plug for that. So if there is a community on the line today that in particular you think that receiving this sort of on-site, in-person training could be good to help pave the path for a project like this, please don't hesitate to contact myself or Denise Ang at Praxis, and we'll connect with you about whether that could work out for your community. And I just got one other question in here. So it isn't necessarily required. To the person who's asking this question, it isn't necessarily required, but it's a really good idea. I mean, is that kind of the essence of what you'd say, Jane?
In terms of the training?
Correct. Yeah,
on-site.
In terms of the training for, no, and not necessarily on-site training from us, from Praxis, but just getting your audit team together on the same page is a really good way to start this sort of work.
Yes.
But not required.
I'm going to have a bit of disagreement.
I think you have to get
everyone working in a cohesive way. You have to get them together on the same page. You can't have, say, a 10-member team and only five come and really kind of learn what's going on. I would say that a foundation piece of doing this method, this community safety assessment, I'll use that term, is preparing everybody who's going to be actually doing the work together to in the same way. And otherwise, you have these, you can have different roles. Like you might have, maybe it's like, well, we can't bring the chief of police here and we can't, you know, bring the chief judge here. And for various reasons, they may not even be good for a working team because of their role, you know, particularly with judges, the judicial autonomy in decision-making, and not really, they shouldn't be working with specific cases in the community that may have come before them. So you might have a team that's actually doing the core investigation, the interviews, the observations, the gathering of the data. Maybe you have an advisory group of the agency heads that you also involve in this process, but in a slightly different way. But the folks who are going to go out and do talk with people, observe the work that they're doing, read the case files and reports related to that work, I really think they all need to be on the same page. And what I'm thinking about, one or two places that I personally am aware of that I've worked with, where what they did was they organized, I think in both cases, it was a two-day training. The first morning of the first day, everyone came. The agency administrators, supervisors, all of the team members, everybody was there together. So everybody got this kind of base overview of, here's what we're going to do, here's how it's going to work, here's what we're going to look at, and do you have any questions? Then the afternoon of the first day and then the second day, that working group, the team, they went through some more intensive training that also started them gathering the data and the information related to what was happening and what was working in that community. So there's some important grounding elements that need to be there. It might look a little different depending on local conditions, and that's where I think sometimes having the kind of conversations that we have with different communities can be really helpful to figure out what that might look like. So that's a kind of long answer to saying, yes, you got to have to get everybody on the same page somehow.
But I think, you know, your point about kind of like how to use people strategically is also a really important one as you're kind of working through how to set up your teams. I was thinking about the whole notion of having judges or agency heads on the audit team, and one of the things I think people have to keep in mind that as you're working through your audit process, not in terms of this thing you talked about, Jane, of getting everybody there at least for the beginning, but when you begin to really move toward data collection and how you, what sense you're making out of your data, that sometimes if the chief of police is there, it really changes the conversation, you know, in terms of what people say. So really how to use people strategically is something else to really think about.
Right, and then keeping people informed along the way.
Right.
So there shouldn't be surprises when you get down to saying this is what we've learned. There needs to be that kind of way of going and talking with the chief or the prosecutor and keeping them in the loop as things go along. I'm noticing we're getting kind of close to our time and wanted to say a couple final things related to getting started and then open it up for any final questions. A couple of the other tools that we have available through the logistics guide. One is a very basic planning worksheet that has the major steps involved listed there. So it's the kind of thing that you can sit down with your local planning group, or if you're in that role of coordinator, and kind of touch base and see, well, what do we have in place here and what needs to be done, and begin to lay out that plan and timeline. So it starts with that big step of securing agreements with agencies. That's another area where we have a sample memorandum of understanding and a tool related to if it seems to be critical and important to have some kind of framework of confidentiality agreement for a team, Those kinds of templates are available through the logistics guide. So it starts there with that securing agreements and then works through defining the audit question, focus groups and audit question and collecting and analyzing data. So again, these are the big broad steps that are what we keep coming back to, seeing where are we at in this, and from this beginning to lay out a timeline. And then we also have I mentioned previously too that safety audit coordinator's activity checklist, which goes into more detail about some of the steps involved, and then some guidance and examples of forming the question. In some ways, we could probably spend almost a whole call on just this piece of things, but the guide includes this set of principles to keep in mind in setting the scope and the specific thing we want to know about. In other words, the question that we're asking. And it's grounding that in understanding what's going on for the people who are being processed as cases, processed as a criminal law case, processed as a protection order case, as a sexual assault case. And that comes in part through things like focus groups, in part by consultation with community-based advocates and organizations in the community. Always kind of keeping in mind this question of keeping people at the center of it, and not the systems or the institutions. Looking for the gap, keeping the focus on the institutional practices, and then that big how question. How does this come about? How does this point of intervention work? And the specific question that you have is going to depend very much on local circumstances and conditions and scope. And part of providing these examples is to give some ideas for how different communities have framed those questions and asked, articulated, this is what we want to learn about. So we want to know, for example, how are protection orders accessible and effective in creating safety and accountability? Or how do prosecution and probation recognize and respond to the complexities of risk and safety for all victims of domestic violence in our county? Those are going to vary depending on what we're looking at, and probably the key point to keep in mind that, again, relates then to when we get to that point of implementation, of putting what we learned into practice, is to try to keep the scope reasonable. Keep the scope, how broad we're going, reasonable in the sense of what resources do we have, how much time do we have, can we really look at absolutely everything from 911 to sentencing and probation in 6 months? Probably not very well. And that might require a retooling and thinking, maybe there's something different we could be doing here. Maybe those self-assessment tools might be more handy if all we have is 6 months to explore some aspect of our practice. So, we could probably spend another half hour talking about how to form that question, but I think this is a time for final questions, right?
Yes, it is. So, again, if you have a question, press the number 1 on your keypad to indicate to Stephanie, our operator, that you'd like to make a question or comment.
We do have a question in the queue.
Great. Go ahead, Stephanie.
And that comes from Pinal County Court Administration. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. It's Melissa. Do you suspect that there will be a call dedicated to the question of developing your safety audit question?
Well, we don't have one scheduled, but we can make sure we address that. And what do you think, Maren? Maybe kind of at the front end of the next one?
Yeah.
I don't have my list in front of me of what we've got in mind for the next.
Sure. Sure. And actually, this is a good way to sort of wrap up our call. So this is the first in a series of audio conference trainings we'll be offering on community assessments and safety and accountability audit. The next call will be in February, and that's when we're going to be talking more about forming the team, identifying who should be on the team, talking more about the etiquette of conducting community assessments, that sort of thing. Your question, though, about really forming the audit question, we're also next month, starting January 25th, I believe, yes, January 25th, we'll be offering monthly networking and discussion calls for people who are more actively and intensively involved in the community assessment process. So, Melissa, somebody such as yourself would really benefit from joining us on a call like that, where we won't have the lines muted, assuming we have a smaller group, and we'll really be able to do some more one-on-one engagement with people around specific things that they're struggling with. So that could be a topic that we would address there.
And also, go ahead, Maren.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, if you're trying to shape something and wondering, you know, is this, in trying to figure out, well, how do we say this? we can talk through that and
explore
that.
Yep, and that was the other thing I was going to say, too, is that we're always here to do one-on-one support to help, because, you know, communities are so unique and what you're looking at is so different that calls can do some good for getting sort of broad information, but for your specific community, we're available to talk with you one-on-one through over the phone or through email, or, you know, we've been doing a lot of webcam consulting lately, which is really fun. So we'll be happy to do that. I will take a moment to announce one other piece of programming that we'll be offering starting in March. And this will be webinar trainings that will take people through how to apply the best practice assessment tools in your community. So Jane and Denise both referenced that on the early part of the call. The best practice assessment tools are a scaled back, condensed version of what we describe in the safety audit. But it's for people, for communities who might not have the full resources to conduct a full audit per se or a full assessment, but really pairs it down, and that's for 911 patrol investigation and prosecution charging decisions. And those will start in March. Registration isn't open for that quite yet, but it will be in January. And all of those of you who are on this call today because you registered will be receiving updates about that information from us periodically through email. But as always, check our website for more information, for registration, that sort of thing. Denise, anything else that you'd like to say?
There is not. I see that we're 4 minutes over. So I want to thank everybody for participating on the call, and we look forward to talking with you on future calls.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Feel free
Thanks,
to email
everyone.
Us at any time, and I'll be sending out an evaluation of today's call shortly with some other resources that were mentioned on today's call. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day and happy holidays.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.